Fork Tales, a podcast that feeds ideas to the food and beverage world. Fork Tales is brought to you by Vigor, a branding and advertising agency focused on the restaurant and hospitality industry, and by Quench, a food and beverage advertising agency that specializes in evolving iconic food and beverage brands. Learn more, visit vigorbranding.com and quenchagency.com. If you love what we're serving up, please give Fork Tales a 5-star review on your podcast service of choice. Think of it as a tip for good service.
Hi, and welcome to Fork Tales. Today we're joined by Jenny Melman, Senior Marketing Director at DFA, Dairy Farmers of America, a farmer-owned cooperative behind some of the most familiar brands in the country. We'll talk to Jenny about marketing cheese and butter in the modern world, farmer-owned innovation, tracking trends, and the best cheese for a grilled cheese sandwich. Jenny, welcome to Fork Tales. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
So,
excited to be here.
Yeah, I'm glad you're here, because I'll tell you the reason. I know why you're here. I know why you're here. I heard you speak. I was at the National Refrigerator and Frozen Food Association. I sat in the audience and I heard you speak. I was like, I need to get you on the podcast. So I really, really, really appreciate your time.
Oh, my pleasure.
So tell us a little about DFA, Dairy Farmers of America, and your role at DFA.
Absolutely. So DFA, one of its amazing for me to be here, is a farmer-owned cooperative. We're actually the leading global dairy cooperative in the world. Our company essentially is owned by 9,500 American dairy farmers.
Wow.
Which is just, it puts a little bit of a different spin when you're working. I've been fortunate to work across a lot of organizations, but when we wake up every day and get to think about the farmers and their families and the longevity that they plan for, it takes a different, it makes things a little bit more personal, because that's our mission, is to provide value to them. I am fortunate enough to lead our cheese and butter businesses on the branded side. And so I get to spend my time hopping between the likes of Borden Cheese, which is just a really fun and heritage brand, and Plugra premium European style butter, which is essentially the butter for bakers. Like this is a butter that was inspired and designed by chefs. So if you like to be in the kitchen and understand why good butter matters, we got it. And then some gem businesses. We have the market leader in Hispanic cheese in Texas, our La Vaquita brand. Mm-hmm. I get to spend a lot of time in Utah and the Intermountains with our Cache Valley brand. So it's fun. I've never found businesses that you can't get people to stop talking about cheese and butter. It is kind of phenomenal.
Yeah. Phenomenal food group. So I mean, it's my favorite. It's hard. Yeah. So, so a couple of things. I'm going to say this just from a personal standpoint, the co-op thing, super cool, super important. We can hit that a little bit because, Quench, that's the agency that houses Fork Tales, and it's what it's all about, is Quench, our branding agency. We work with several co-ops, and a lot of people don't understand that. They see brands, and rightfully so. The consumer maybe doesn't need to know, maybe, but they see brands, and they don't realize it's farmer-owned, and they don't realize what that means. I'll say for you guys, because your board of directors, or depending on how you're set up, you're answering to a lot of farmers, and it's interesting and good, and I'll say in bad, and it's really kind of an interesting business model. So I just think that's really
is really interesting. I think we're set up both like other companies and not.
Right.
Is our board of directors, we have farmers, they work directly with, our CEO and leaders. But from a running of the businesses and the brands, we work like other companies, and it falls on our shoulders. At the end of the day, if I can do right by our farmers and provide, like I said, value to them and their families, I'm doing my job well. And as I would say, I was raised in the brand world as a steward of kind of brand. I think that does well when you treat your brands properly and you get to have fun with them in a way that's appropriate for them, right? I look at brands as humans in some way, shape, or form.
I love
it. And so within their personalities. And so I get to spend my time thinking about all of these great brands. And at the end of the day, when I go home at night, if I've been successful, it means that I get to support our farmer owners. And I don't know what I don't know what is better than that. It's certainly not supporting Wall Street, in my personal opinion.
I concur. In fact, and I'm not making this about me by any means, but like obviously, you know, food and beverage marketer, travel around the country, all the cities, different brands, do all this cool stuff. Tomorrow, I will be in the middle of the country. I'll be having breakfast with a bunch of farmers. And I'm not saying that because you're on this thing. I'm telling you I will do that. And I do this. I have a place in the mountains and I stop and have breakfast with these farmers. I just love it because I feel like it's like Norman Rockwell. I feel like these are the most wholesome, good human beings on earth. And to me, it's grounding. And it's like almost therapy. And it sounds really weird to say that, but I'm kidding you not. I will have breakfast tomorrow morning. And it'll probably be 8 o'clock as they get in. That's not that early for a farmer, but the restaurant doesn't open that early. And I look forward to it with great anticipation. So
every time I get the opportunity to talk to one of our farmer owners, you're right. It's grounding. These are people who have committed their lives and their family's lives to doing good for everybody else in such a wholesome, nutritious way. Mm-hmm. But they're incredibly, like, they have businesses to run, and it is so admirable how savvy they are at running their farms as well. It's a separate business very much, but they, mm-hmm. yeah, they're, I have nothing but the utmost respect for farmers.
Yeah. And, you know, I have sort of a darker side story on the whole co-op thing too. And I'll get to that later on, maybe about, you know, just because it is a unique beast, not to bring anything bad, but it's a really wild story. But anyway, we'll jump into your stuff more. So the work at DFA includes focus on cheese and butter, but when it comes to cheese and butter, those aren't new products. They're not trendy products. So from a marketing standpoint, is it a challenge or is that an opportunity?
It's great. I love that question. I think on the surface, there's nothing trendy about them. We can talk about trends later, but I think what's so fascinating is how humans evolve. And the reality is dairy has been very trendy for the last couple of years, right? Think mm-hmm. about cottage cheese.
Yep.
And how the world is operating and the growth that has had. The wholesome, nutritious, like, part of real milk mm-hmm. and what milk should mean is appropriately, people are beginning to realize that again. Cheese is one of those foods that you get to play in health and wellness and indulgence in the same time, mm-hmm. right? From an ingredient perspective, you don't get to do that very often. Butter, similar, like you have the super pure ingredient. And so dairy's almost having a little bit of a renaissance. To your point, there are certain expectations and there are, you know, there are businesses rooted in something. And so for me, it's less about the challenge and more about the opportunity to continue to find opportunities to make our brands and products relevant in people's lives. I genuinely think that my secret to what I think is okay marketing is really getting to know and understand people and what makes them tick, what makes their decisions. And so we have these brands that, as I think about today and the decisions people are making, fit so well into their everyday lives, their very routine moments, their indulgent moments, their exploratory moments, all of those things. And food is supposed to provide all of those roles. Mm-hmm. We have it for different reasons. So for me, it's an opportunity. But what's not to love when you get to have that mix of healthy indulgence from the same core product? Because the products I work with are mm-hmm. their ingredients or their snacks. Mm-hmm. And so you get to kind of think about what that moment in time really looks like.
You hit something there too, because you're talking about the different, you know, the ingredients and everything else and the education and the health. So you got to walk a fine line for information engagement. I mean, how do you decide when to educate versus when to entertain in the dairy
industry? It's a great question. I think, For me personally and for the branded side, and education kind of seeds itself naturally in entertainment, right? When we think about what we talk about. So with Borden, made with real milk from American dairy farmers. Like mm-hmm. it is an education piece, but when we talk to families, that real milk is important to them. Today, mm-hmm. you don't really know what's in everything. And so I think it goes back to kind of that wholesome purity is naturally built in. Most families know you get a good amount of calcium in dairy, right? And mm-hmm. so giving your kids these products is really good and helps build strong bones. So I tend to focus a bit more on entertainment. And I wouldn't, you know, making sure that like we can deliver messages in an engaging way that they're relevant to your moment in time, whoever you are, assuming mm-hmm. you're kind of in the target we're talking to from a my brand perspective, right? For dairy is everybody. Mm-hmm. When we talk about brands, there's always not everybody's going to be a, you know, a home baker or a home culinary right. expert. But so I think for me, I tend to focus more on engagement and when appropriate or when the moment really meets it, focus on health.
Mm-hmm. Super smart. I mean, I love what you're saying because, I mean, we're always talking as an agent, we always talk about storytelling. And, you know, I think a lot of times I'll say some clients will think, well, oh, you just want to win creative awards or you're just trying to be funny or you know, whatever. But the point is, if you can't get noticed, if someone doesn't hear you or notice you or see you, you can't explain to them, educate them, sell them, teach them. You know, you need to get attention. So I'm glad to hear you say that the entertainment part or the, you know, the marketing as far as the branding and standing out part, if you will, is super important. Storytelling, however you want to.
Yeah, we live in a noisy everything, right? Our day to day is so, you get so many messages that finding ways to do it. And this, I think, has been true for years. It's just social media has sort of amped it up a little bit because, you know, we do 10 things at the same time now. Right. But if a tree falls in the woods and no one's there to hear it, it doesn't matter at the end of the day. If I have the world's best product, if nobody picks it up and can experience that, I have failed at my job.
Yeah. And let's face it. I mean, it's expensive, right? Marketing and advertising, hiring an agency, whatever. There's an investment there really isn't, you know, you need to make a return on that. And then if you don't, again, if it doesn't get heard, it doesn't sell. And at the end of the day, I think we're all hired to sell more stuff. I mean, you know,
it's really interesting because there are parts that can be. I think sometimes working on brands, we get so attracted to the big thing that we forget about the little moments. A huge part of what Borden does is find the little moments, the occasions, those pieces. We spend a lot of time talking about grilled cheese here and why I love it, in addition to that it goes, you know, Borden melts is literally perfect for it.
Sure.
I love it because who doesn't smile when you talk about grilled cheese? Who doesn't get that warm feeling? And so to be able to say, okay, how do I remind you of that? And the power that brings, the smile, the nostalgia, the comfort, right? Is where you're like, oh, that is not always as expensive. It's sometimes finding that thing that connects with people more than how you go about explaining it.
Well said. So what's one marketing assumption about dairy that you've had to challenge or that you got to solve?
I mean, so maybe not as directly me, because I don't work in our milk businesses, but I do think as within the dairy industry that milk comes from cows, right? Is there has been this proliferation of things that are called milk.
Right.
At the end of the day, a real milk comes from a dairy farmer on a farm. And so I think just what that looks like and the reminding people of the benefits of that wholesome nutritiousness is a pretty important thing. But it is. I think the term, you know, whether you live in the north or south and call it soda or pop or Coke or whatever it is, that plays true. And I think in the last 10 years, the dairy industry has started to have to navigate that a little bit differently than before. And so just a reminder that this real milk is really something worth investing in and wanting.
Mm-hmm. Good deal. So DFA is farmer owned. We talked about it's a co-op. Talk a little bit about the structure and how it influences innovation and marketing.
That's a great question. So it doesn't influence innovation and marketing that much, which is great. We have our board of directors who work with all of our farmers and then our board of directors who work with our leadership. And at the end of the day, if from a brand perspective, we can figure out ways to get people to use more dairy-based products and I can provide value back to the farmers, I've done my job from that kind of board level. I think where then it filters down into what I'd say is probably a much more normal looking company is, all right, if that's my objective, what are the problems I need to solve? What are the opportunities? Where are there gaps, right, in either usage or education or just you know, other convenience, other areas of life that are stopping you from choosing that. And I go get to build new innovation products, and we get to talk, tell new stories to help fill those gaps. So I would say for us, the biggest difference, honestly, is I don't often think in quarters, which I think in a lot of companies, you know, you haven't delivered something on the quarter. It's always there at the end of the day. I hope most marketers have a business mentality, but the farmers are always thinking about their future. And so DFA then doesn't take a short-term view. We really, you know, we try to, we do, not try, we invest for them. And so then when I'm thinking about things is, yes, there are short-term things that we do, but how am I thinking about innovation in a way that can challenge us for something that isn't going to hit the shelves, be unsuccessful for 3 months, I paid a bunch of money. That's bad resourcing for me. That's not me being a good steward to our farmers. And so I think that's really the difference, is I tend to think about things with a little bit longer term scope. And it means that sometimes it's a little slower to build a campaign, to launch something, because we want it to be right. And by the way, at previous roles, I would have said, of course we want it to be right. But then you get a different form of pressure of, well, you said you were going to do this by this date.
That's right. We live and die by the financial quarters and business models. And in your case, you don't necessarily have to do that.
No, it is amazing. The opportunities I've had to talk to our farmer owners, they're always talking about tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And that is genuinely not only a gift, but then it resets my mindset a lot when I'm thinking about things.
Yeah. And I said, excuse me, we work with two or three co-ops, and I'm always impressed and intrigued by hearing from the farmers, getting their viewpoints. In some instances, they are very removed from the brand. It's a big brand, big brands like you have. And in other cases, it's very, very small and very kind of very close to the vest, you know, as far as the brand and the interest, and the farmers have a lot of control over it. In the one case, the farmers typically always want to be in the ads, which I always think is funny. Not that it's a bad thing, and we've done great work with it, and it's been fun. And I think it really works, you know. In other cases, it's like you wouldn't even know. In some of your brands, if you didn't say it was a co-op, people would have no idea. You know what I mean? It's just a brand that they know, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. I will say we do when we have an amazing DFA marketing team. And so when we are doing something that has a farm scene, it is always with our farmers.
Yeah.
And they do a really great job telling our farmer stories, sharing information with the farmers, but also sharing that back. Mm-hmm. If you are the consumer who is intrigued by, you know, who owns it in this day of, you know, house of brands, et cetera, finding information is
right.
They've done a great job of that. But that is to that point, I think there's a, I hope always in marketing, but I think there's an authenticity, and then we sort of ensure it here. And so when something's filmed on a farm, it's one of our farmers' farms. There's a lot That's of awesome. Them to choose from, which is amazing. Because then any time of year, you're good.
Well, yeah. I mean, if I counted right, you have like 37 brands. And I could be wrong with that number.
We have a lot of brands. Yes. So I don't know the exact number. I haven't counted. Somebody probably can get me in trouble for that. Under us, I have, I want to say it's 8 butter brands,
wow.
3, the 2 cheese brands. Mm-hmm. Our Hispanic, we have several Hispanic brands. La Vaquita is sort of my gem, if you will. Mm-hmm. But they're all under us, and that's just under me. There is an incredible marketing team that supports our milk brands, and a different incredible team that supports our ice cream brands.
Mm-hmm. I recognize probably half of them, at least of the brands, more than half. I knew a lot of them. So it's phenomenal. And I had no idea. Even when you were speaking, it's like, oh, dairy farmers. I know them. And then when I went and looked at the website, like, dear God, I didn't know how many brands you guys had, which is fantastic. So what's an example of an idea that maybe started with a farmer and became a big win? Is there anything that they, you know, innovation wise that they maybe came
That's
up with?
That's a great question. I don't have a great answer.
Okay.
I think to that point is if it did, it probably filtered down through two layers. And my guess is it was more kind of on the milk side. It also, you know, I think we are talking about innovation from a product side, how we navigate supply chain and all of that. There has been a tremendous amount, and it's something that DFA is continues to become more and more exceptional at every day. And so I imagine the answer is yes. On the brand side, no, my job is to surprise and delight. And hopefully when we get there and we do that, the farmers are also surprised and delighted.
Absolutely. So the future of dairy is being shaped in ways consumers don't always see. Okay. So what does innovation look like in the dairy beyond new flavors or products?
Yeah, it's a great question. So I think there's a couple avenues, right? And to your comment on new flavors, I think that that is sort of the, I won't call it a line extension, but that sort of is always the base. And I go back to what it is, either how do we surprise and delight, or how do we help something that is a barrier today? So Borden, a couple of years ago, well, last year we launched it, but in following trends, like spicy food has become a thing and different levels. And there's no reason that that can't exist in the cheese world. And so it was super exciting last year, after quite a bit of research and talking to consumers, we launched a flavor sensations line under Borden that is specifically spicy, smoky, et cetera. Right. Like, how do you go beyond the traditional cheddar? It is one line extension, but when you think about, okay, your kid, your family, your child, whatever, may want mild cheddar, but you want a kick, it's a great area to be able to mix and match and provide a little extra spice that maybe wasn't there before. I think when we get past that idea of, okay, what is that? How do we think about form? How do we think about function? DFA, I want to say it was a year and a half ago or something, launched a new packaging system for a multi-pack for cottage cheese. And it's in the Kemp's brand. And when we think about that, the ability, you know, most people may not only want one cottage cheese in the refrigerator. And so how do you have the set that you only have to pick up the one thing and it's there? And so there's that. I think when we push beyond sort of what I'll call maybe packaging and flavor type, I think it's really about how do we understand needs. I'm super excited about a launch we have upcoming in Borden. We're going to be launching a Borden dip, so a refrigerated queso dip, nice. Or refrigerated nacho cheese. This to me is like truly innovation. What you can buy today is not in the refrigerated section, and the label has a lot of things in it. And when we think about the purity of dairy, how do we maintain that as much as we possibly can and create an experience that, whether you're, you know, literally pulling out a snack and dipping chips in to a queso or a nacho cheese, et cetera, or you're making broccoli for your kids and you know they're not eating the broccoli alone and you can pour some of it over the top, that's the kind of product that to me manages to maintain that wholesomeness that we stand behind. But provides a new way to use cheese at home. You've seen it, right? You've had, doesn't go to a restaurant and order a queso or something like that. So it's not that it's a novel product, but the ability to do it yourself simply and feel really confident about it is novel. So that's, I think, great. It's checking in with people and are they enjoying things in occasions that we're not yet able to meet? And then in health and wellness, of course, right? Is how do we think about how it's evolving and how to ensure dairy generally has what you're looking for. It's maybe more a communication priority to make sure people understand, like, you know, have string cheese. It's 6 grams of protein in a stick. And while I am a chomper instead of a peeler, they are always in my fridge.
I guess that is a thing. Like, some people peel and some people just chop, right? Okay. Yeah. I respect that. Just like an ice cream, I'll say, and maybe this can sound really alien, but there's microwavers and there's non-microwavers. I don't know if you've ever microwaved ice cream.
I have not.
Okay. Well, we used to work with a large,
like, ice to get cream. It scooped out, or because you wanted melted ice cream?
Just a little bit of a, like 8 seconds. I'll challenge you. Sometimes try this. It brings out the flavor. It's phenomenal. It's phenomenal.
And I'm sure our ice cream team has.
Well, that's
what somebody hands me ice cream, I'm a pretty happy girl. And I'm like, oh, but it tastes exactly how it needs to taste.
One of the brands we worked on for 18 years, and it's not one of yours, unfortunately, but it was Turkey Hill Dairy. It's a turkey ale ice cream. And everybody in there, the president of the company, the director, the CMO, we'd go in these meetings, and they were all, I learned this 18 years ago. They were microwavers. I'm like, what do you mean? They're like, oh, we put it in the microwave for like 8 seconds or whatever, 5 seconds before, and it just softens it up. It makes it a little melty. It's not soup, you don't turn it, but it brings the flavor out. So just you try it. It's phenomenal.
I will try it this weekend with the Kemps that's in my fridge.
There
freezer.
You go.
It's not in my fridge. It's in my freezer.
One of the things too that you mentioned, and I know this isn't in your necessary wheelhouse, but it certainly falls into the DFAs, is cottage cheese is having its day, isn't it? It's like a thing.
It is in a lot of ways a lot like cheese. It is such a versatile ingredient.
Yeah.
And the versatility has sort of exploded. It is a great way to be an easy creator, to have mm-hmm. protein,
yep.
Which is obviously everywhere today and maybe sometimes too much, but not the cottage cheese, the protein. But it just, I think a few years ago, my generation hadn't been as exposed to it. And I think there was a little bit of a leap, and the TikTok generation got mm-hmm. exposed and yeah. did wonders.
Yeah. Well, my daughter,
power of products.
Yeah. My daughter over the holidays, cause I'm trying to watch carbs. And I mean, I love bread and all that, but try and watch it. Nothing. We made the cottage cheese bagels. So I have a big bag of cottage cheese bagels in my refrigerator, and it took like no time at all. And they're phenomenal.
Phenomenal. The cottage cheese chips are even easier
mm-hmm.
and you have them and then you just have them out for a couple of days. It's great.
Oh, that's awesome.
Best snack. Yeah, I mean, sorry, second best snack, aside from a piece of cheese.
That's right. That's awesome. And I will get weird on this one thing. One thing I do with cottage cheese, which I know this probably gross 90% of the audience out. I'll take a little bowl of cottage cheese, and I'll take some spaghetti sauce, pour that on, and a little Parmesan cheese, and eat that. It tastes like a decadent lasagna. It's like you got grandma's leftover lasagna from the night before out of the refrigerator. Oh my God. It's like, I'm getting hungry. Anyway, so I know that sounds weird. So, all right, next we're going to do, we'll have some fun on top of the more business and trend stuff. But
okay.
So cheese takes. We're going to have a little fun with this round of questions related to your personal preferences when it comes to cheese.
So okay.
Here are the questions. You're making grilled cheese sandwiches. What cheese are you using?
my go-to, I am very classic, is American. Okay. I use the American melts that we have because they're made with cream. So you get a little bit of a better melt, and it just, you get the coverage, the ooey gooey. Mm-hmm. I feel like when there is grilled cheese involved,
cheese pull.
The cheese pull is,
yeah.
And a little bit of butter, never mayo, not a mayo person. Spread a little bit of butter on some sourdough bread. When I really want to change it up, which is not often, but I will do two slices. I'll do a slice of our sharp cheddar melts
mm-hmm.
and a slice of pepper jack because you want that little bit of extra bite in the cheese.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's a pretty solid combination.
Well done.
Yeah.
That's R&D right there. That's awesome. And you know, it's funny we said about the cheese. Like that's in our industry. Like we have a content studio, right? We have food styles. We shoot food and beverage social for people. The term cheese pull is a thing. Like,
oh, yeah.
You have to have the cheese pull. Like, it's got to, you know, there's certain things in the business that, you know, everyone knows
what it means. It is a legitimate thing.
All right. Pre-shredded cheese, convenient or a flavor crime?
So, I'm really bad at decision making, apparently. I have two takes on this. 99% of my life, the answer is convenient, right? Mm-hmm. If I am having tacos, you should be using pre-shredded cheese. It is just, the purpose of that meal is delicious and easy. Go for it. When I am throwing cheese on a salad, when I am just me at home, if I am hosting an occasion and I am making like fancy mac and cheese bites,
mm-hmm.
which sounds crazy, but those to me are fancy, then I will likely shred myself. Just because I think there's something that goes into that, that it feels a little bit more special,
mm-hmm.
but definitely not a crime. It is really convenience and motivation most of my life. Now, the chunk is critical. If you're a cheese snacker,
mm-hmm.
either the slices or the chunk you'd shred because you just pick it up and literally take bites of cheese along the way.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. I love cheese. Is there ever such a thing as too much cheese?
I mean, if you're lactose intolerant, I guess maybe. I
don't. For the rest of us.
Yeah. For everybody else, no, it is. It is a Melman family thing that if there isn't cheese, the table is probably not complete. I've watched my niece ask for buttered noodles and will sit there with the Parmesan next to her and is just eating it out of the bag. And you're just like, what is happening here?
Yeah.
There's no such thing as too much cheese.
Yeah. No, I agree. I agree. I used to get, you know, pizza with extra cheese. anyway. Yeah. So American cheese, is it real cheese?
Yes. Okay. So yes, full stop. The American is a combination of other cheeses is essentially, but it has a firm standard of identity. I think it's gotten that, it's really interesting. I think it's gotten that association because of the individually wrapped singles, which to me are when you want nostalgia, that's what you go for. When you want melt, that's what you go for. Like those to me, if ever you try and cover something thoroughly with shreds, whether you do it yourself or not, like an egg sandwich deserves American cheese or some version of individually wrapped singles. Like there's just melted. Nothing better. But yes, American is there. It's all real cheese. It is a combination that gets it to it too.
Okay, this will be the hardest question in this group here. So if you'd only eat one cheese for the rest of your life, what would you choose?
So I have my everyday persona and my fancy persona. My fancy persona is burrata.
Well done. Burrata is, got a burrata.
My everyday persona is four cheese mix because the combination of the four cheeses, it's got a mildness to it. It looks pretty on anything because you get the white and yellow mix and you can also just eat it by the handfuls. And it is, it sounds crazy because it says four cheese mix. It is the most versatile cheese I think there is.
I love a good Parmigiano Reggiano, but that's, you know, that's good, fancy.
I went to the fancy not side too.
Yeah.
If I were to choose the creaminess of burratas.
That's awesome. It's the best. All right. Trends, leadership. Let's talk about that. Dairy trends quickly shifting. So as you know, we do a quench. I forget how many years it's been. I think 18 years. I think I'm right about that. We've been doing a food trends nationally. So how do you and the DFA team look at trends and decide which ones you're going to respond to?
Great question. I think I'm going to answer as a marketer more than a DFA person, and then I'll bring in DFA.
Okay.
I think it's just sort of part of your daily go about, right? Is we're all stewards of humans and human interaction and human relationship. And so we are fortunate that as part of DFA, we have a lot of people who help ground us in some of those trends and what they really see. But I believe in reading. I believe, like, I'm a pain in the behind to go to the supermarket with because I want to walk every aisle, not because I think I'm going to buy something, but because I'm very intrigued by what it's there. At the heart of it, I look at what I do as problem solving and getting to know people. And so whether you're buying detergent or chocolate or cheese, there is some commonality in terms of what your motivations are. And so I think looking and seeing the world, right? Not letting it pass you by too much is a huge part of it. And then you bring in experts who kind of keep you up to speed. My team divides it in a really interesting way. We have the people who are just always on social and the things they send me are fascinating. One of my team members yesterday left a magazine on my desk with all these pages folded down and like four ideas scribbled for each page. And I'm like, oh, and I just think that that's just sort of human nature if we give ourselves the right to be explorers. And then on the DFA side, I tend to focus on the next couple of years on the DFA side. We have an R&D center. We have an innovation team that is thinking bigger and is probably reading into stuff I maybe haven't seen or it's been a passing, but I haven't linked it yet. And they're a phenomenal group that's outdoing that thought process. And we like to bounce ideas off each other. But it's where the practical of, you know, what real innovation means versus what retailers and consumers demand, et cetera, play in and out day in. So I just like to look at what's happening in the world. I know it sounds kind of lame, but
no, that's how you find it. When we build our trends presentations, I mean, really, that's what you're we're doing at a macro level, and we're doing a lot of research to distill it down. Because, you know, a trend, like when we do our trends presentations, it's not something like, it should never be a thing the first time you've ever heard something. Because it's not a trend then, right?
No, it's a fad.
It could be a fad, right. And so you got to hit that arc of the trend right in the right spot so that it's relatively new. It's something that's got a lot of gravity behind. It's something that's moving and you see it continuing on to a degree. And because it doesn't make a sense for a marketer to invest money in a fad, right? It comes and goes by the time you get it out. So it's really important. In fact, in the categories, a couple of places where we were able to harness that was, obviously protein. I mean, that's, you know, you guys are right in the sweet spot.
But the trend is started. I mean, it's not new. It's health and wellness and how it's come to life. But to that point, protein has now been, was it the early 2000s with South Beach? Like that was when protein, I think, started becoming a thing. And it's been a pretty slow and steady gain. And in the last 3 years,
just
has exploded into something a little bit more than a slow and steady game.
Yeah, there's no question. Another trend that we found, and we actually use this in the dairy business, and this is going back some years now. So this is certainly not new news, because it's a trend that's probably, maybe 7 or 8 years old now. It was where it's made is why it's good. So like the Turkey Hill business, the ice cream business, they were started in a farm area of Lancaster County. And, you know, we had this whole imported from Lancaster County. So it was it's all about the farm and all that. And very, people wanted to know in that case, where it's made is why it's good. And you had said earlier about the cows, like milk coming from cows. It was kind of an interesting thing, because it's like, they don't want your, because we dug into this very deep, just like I'm sure you have, they don't necessarily see all that, but a picture of a farm makes me feel good about my food, right? And it makes sense. But those are things you can lean into.
That's the trend in it, though. Like when I kind of think about it, it's the idea of authenticity and
giving people
trust, right?
That's what it is. That's right.
That's where I kind of take that next. And I'm like, okay, the word authentic, one of my business partners literally hates when I use it. It is a good overhang for, but what does that really mean? If something's authentic, then I feel like I understand it and I can trust it.
That's right.
That's, to me, is like, that's not a trend. It's just, again, when we think about how the world is today, and you can be literally pulled in 1,000 directions at the same time, I want to know and understand what's in some of the food I eat. Others, you know, I might not care as much. But in the world of dairy, like to be able to have that, that security that this is real milk and we have protected you and treated the farmers every day wake up to treat their communities and the larger communities right. And so to be able to do that back by making sure people understand how much pride they take in their work, it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, that's very well said. So you've built a career in an industry that requires a lot of creativity, right? And again, we talk about these brands that you know, you can say butter or cheese. It's like, you know, how exciting. But so how do you stay inspired? How do you keep things fresh? And how do you keep the creative juices flowing?
It's a great question. I think that some people get really inspired by, you know, numbers, and some people get really inspired by seeing a lot of things. For me, I can't draw to save my life. Like a stick figure is a challenge. You definitely don't want to be near me if I attempt to sing. But the thought of that problem solving. And so for me, the way that comes about is I tend to comment out loud often when I'm like, something's broken in this system, even if it's a little thing. And those annoyances are things that I sort of take note of, because then I'm like, oh, I get to solve for that. Right. And so I think that's the, I wish I had this, or this thing took me longer, or I cut my finger on a package, whatever that was in my everyday life. I'd say I'm like a commentator of annoyance in some ways and looking to solve it, but I'm a watcher of where people are surprised and delighted. Like I mentioned, I am a terrible human to go to a grocery store with or to try and send in for a quick errand. Like for me, the grocery store is, I want to see, I want to understand. And I feel like that creativity can be sparked from anything, right? Is you take a look at, like, I remember being asked when I, early on in my career, when I was innovating about, when I was interviewing about innovation, and it was around the time of the iPod. And so you might imagine everyone's talking about Apple. And I was like, it was like the lead pencil company. Like, think about how they brought value to you and brought value to themselves, because who wants to sharpen a pencil? Mm-hmm. And I think that's now I look and you're like, okay, what exists? What's been new to the market? Or what has kind of become a sleeper hit that might relate to what we're doing? Or I can understand the insight and I can talk to people that way. Because much of it is not product innovation. It is, I want to talk to you in a new way. We were doing a really cool campaign for Borden this year on for back to school. And it went like, the premise of the campaign was from UGG to no big deal, right? Is everybody at those moments getting back to school, you just have the UGG list. Like, I don't want to do dishes right now. That's an UGG. And so we set apart to try and solve some of those UGG moments. But it's not, we haven't created fireworks, but we've made it a little bit better for you. And to me, that is a really, that to me is inspiring, is how do I just make something, you know, that 1% better is pretty important.
You talked a lot about going to the store and don't go to the grocery store with you and all that stuff, which I totally respect. Because we've done shop alongs and all kinds of research for our clients, because it's important, right? Have you ever stopped anybody in the store and said, hey, excuse me, why are you buying those two things? Or I figured,
I've also handed out coupons and then it turns into a 10-minute conversation.
That's awesome.
Yeah. The talking to people in stores, I was relatively young in my career and I was trying to sell something and we didn't have, tech wasn't a huge thing yet. So research was incredibly expensive. And I spent 4 hours in the pasta sauce aisle, just watching and talking. And
that's awesome.
For me, that was a really fun day. I could imagine for other people that might be not as much fun. And maybe for the people I talked to, that wasn't as much fun, but I had a great time.
Yeah, that's great. You know, it's funny too. And I can say this to you because, you know, you're a butter person, but I always tell them, I say this out loud, literally, and I'm not kidding, like once a week, because this is my thing. I'm like, life's too short not to eat real butter. I mean, you know, you just can't ever. I mean, I would never. I mean, my wife, it's kind of funny because, you know, first got married, you know, she'd have like kind of spreads or whatever. I'm like, no. We put butter in there. You know, this is, you know.
And I'm going to one up you. Life's too short not to eat better butter. And so we will get you some Flugro, because you will it is.
Oh, I've had it. Oh, I know. I know the brand. Yeah.
But
we'll take some. Yeah. The other thing, I also say life's too short not to drink good wine. So that's, you know,
that's fair.
A couple rules. Yeah. I have a couple rules throughout the whole thing. So now how do you encourage creativity amongst your team and other team members?
It's really interesting, because I think sometimes you have to encourage it and sometimes it's natural. And what I do think is it happens all the time in little moments. And so trying to acknowledge the little moments, right? So when the person left me the magazine, like just a quick note, like I love that. I didn't ask for anything. This thing appeared with 18 different ways to be creative and to be able to say like, thank you so much. That was really smart. Like, which one do you like the most and why? That facilitates that conversation. I'm so lucky that the team I'm surrounded by all has really different areas that they get their creativity from. And you know, the people who are super active on social, some of the videos they send me, I'm like, I don't get it. Could you explain it to me? And that, but it elicits a conversation. Others, you sit there and just laugh and want to share it with like 15 people. And so I do think it's just, everybody is in creative in their own way, finding that thing and recognizing it. And sometimes in a moment that might not seem it, gives the permission structure that to keep doing it and that's okay. And honestly, a great use of time. It also, a huge part of creativity just comes with solving our business problems, right? And so that every day, and it goes back to the, I love when somebody walks in is telling me about a challenge and has thought through with three ways to solve it and a recommendation. That's creative. And if when that can be acknowledged appropriately, it continues to drive that motion.
I mean, curiosity is the base of creativity, right? You have to ask questions, ask why, think, you know, and things come from that.
That's exactly it.
Fantastic. So, I mean, DFA is thinking long-term, not just about products, but about the people and leadership in the industry. When you look at the next generation of leaders in your industry, what gives you optimism?
I think a couple of things. With technology and AI, obviously marketing is changing. So when I think about that, but at the heart of it, we were talking about authenticity a minute ago, authenticity continues to win. And so I almost love that, because we are challenging ourselves constantly to push into new things, but mm-hmm. part of that comes with creativity. And I think not losing that balance of sometimes I'm going to try something new. I know how to level set. It gives me so much confidence, because if you don't push boundaries, you don't grow. And I think mm-hmm. that's true of a human. I think that's true of a business. I think that's true of a company, et cetera. And so being able to watch that as we're continuously evolving, and honestly, the world has changed more in the last 2 years probably than in the 10 prior to that, is fascinating. I think the other thing specifically for DFA is I'm watching around it. Our DFA team understands and cares about the farmer owners. And I think when everybody in a company is aligned to the same mission, you know you're going to win. Like mm-hmm. we may be approaching it six different ways on how we get there, but the core of what we're trying to do, right, to bring value to our farmers is the same. And so to me, that's where you get this difference of thought, and it creates something great at the end. And so that's what I'm optimistic about, is everybody is aligned to the same end goal and has a different point of view, or 15 different points of view on what the right next things to do are. That, I think, sets people up mm-hmm. for success, because as long as you're willing to engage in those conversations, you'll land somewhere that's great.
Yeah. You just said something that really kind of spurred a thought. Cause I mean, again, I go back to, I was saying you have 37 brands, if I counted correctly, not going to quiz on all the names and different brands, but just to that point, and I know you have your section, your brands, and then there's other people like you that have, which totally get that, but it's butter, it's cheese, right? By and large, ice cream, stuff like that. But I mean, how, like you said something earlier, which I love and I totally agree with, a brand, you treat a brand like a person, right? It's like, what's their voice? What's their personality? They can't be like, I don't know, smart, like just a scientist in one voice and then all of a sudden be a comedian the next time. It becomes very disjointed. But so does it get hard to create personalities for all those different brands if they're in the same categories?
So ideally it exists because that has already been created and it's just about sharing that. So for me, right, the brand voice for Pfluger butter and Keller's creamery are very different. Mm-hmm. And they're fundamentally, you know, they're both pure butter, but they're different. One has more mm-hmm. butter fat, you know, one is more of an everyday. Same goes for Borden and Cache Valley. And so I think that understanding them, it goes back to the original. I don't, dairy is good, like for everybody, any given brand in any category, right, should be very clearly meant for a group of people. And so mm-hmm. the brand voice is, the brand is designed because it's acknowledging that audience, and that may evolve over time. But to me, that's how they remain, that you're not competing against yourself. At the end of the day, we're all like, forget food, we're all competing, right? There's only so much of an attention economy you can gain.
Right.
But the goal is that by staying true to the brands, I'm getting the piece of the attention economy of the person that I want, and the other mm-hmm. brand is getting it of the other person that they yeah. want.
I mean, the best definition I ever heard is a brand's a promise. Like your brand, like the Keller brand, is a promise of to. And when you can answer those things, you'll be right on all the time. And then you yes. create that voice, that consistent voice, and you'll have a winning combination. And it's hard to stay true to that, but
I had a business school professor who, when we were talking about positioning and what that looked mm-hmm. like, he said, if you've done positioning properly, it will always lead to world peace. You can imagine a bunch of 20-year-olds in a class were cracking up. I do it every single time. Mm-hmm. And it is totally true. That to yep. me is the challenge. And it goes back to, am I delivering something that can be meaningful to somebody? And once you do that, their day is better. They make someone else's day better. They make someone else's day better, and eventually world peace.
Yeah. And we had a category where, we were the market leader in a national branded category, and there was some subcategories, some specialty categories that we were not a part of. And so what we did was we created brands that were targeted. One was more of a, I'll say an Italian style, if you will, but completely different name, completely different brand, completely different voice, and a completely different target market. Another one was sustainability. It was a very wholesome, sustainable product. And again, all the same product, really. I mean, now the sustainable one was sustainable, and the Italian one had Italian extra virgin olive oil, things
yeah,
like that.
You have something in it that makes it what you're saying it is.
It wasn't the same exact product with three different labels, but it was basically the same category. It's the same thing. And we created three different brands and all three very successful. And it was because we, to your point, we knew the product, we knew the voice, we knew the target audience, and we knew who we were in that category, like, and how to talk to them.
We live in a country of 300 million people and everybody right. is unique. And if you think about it, and that's why I use the personification, what makes one person not better or worse, just different than somebody else. And it's how you speak. It's how you think. It's how you choose to clothe yourself. Like that's not, there's no mandate about that. Mm-hmm. And you as a person may be very different at a dinner table with your board of directors versus your spouse or your kids.
Right.
But anybody who is in either of those settings with you doesn't think you're a different human.
That's right.
You're well just said. Flexing mm-hmm. a different muscle.
That's right. So. Very well said. All right. I'm going to have one last question. You've been phenomenal, okay. by the way. Thank you. And this will be the hardest one for you because I'll let you say something with cheese, but you can't say a grilled cheese sandwich. I'm taking it off the table. If you have one final meal, what would you eat and why?
So do I need the whole meal or can I just have dessert?
Yeah, dessert. That's it.
Okay.
Whatever
if I'm
you want.
Just having dessert, ice cream every day, all the time, because why wouldn't you? Mm-hmm. But yeah, ice cream and it, if you have the advantage to have either Heath bar or rainbow sprinkles on it, not chocolate, I'm game, hot fudge, but like chocolate ice cream with something on it would be mm-hmm. my everyday. If you needed me to have a real meal, it would be like, Neapolitan pizza, right? Mm. Chewy crust.
Yeah.
And vodka, chicken, a la vodka kind of pasta mm-hmm. penne. But mm-hmm. it would absolutely have cheese on it because neither sure. of those meals is complete without great cheese.
That's right. I totally agree. And your chocolate ice cream hopefully has high milk fat content. Like you go with a higher milk, right? Very creamy. And very microwave creamy. It 5 seconds or so in the microwave.
So apparently, a new trick for me to try.
Yeah, you'll see. You'll thank me for that one. That's a good one. So, well, hey, I thank you so much. You were phenomenal. I could be talking to you for hours. I mean, I love your attitude and your positivity around branding and the products. And you have wonderful brands. So congratulations.
Thanks for the conversation. I loved it.
Awesome.